Have you or any member of your family been stopped by police in what you believe is a case of racial profiling?
Yeah. Actually, it's quite common. It surprises a lot of people that, given, my education and my prominence as a public figure here and speaking, that somehow I would be exempt from it. But no. It's more common than people realize. So, yes, absolutely.
What do you say when that happens? And what reasons do the police give you or your children if you've been pulled over?
You know, it's one of these things that's very, very, it's subtle. And a lot of it is a reflection of how we've been raised. It's generational. So my father, very much raised in the South, North Carolina, my mother from Florida. I was raised, I'm 55 years old. So I grew up with all of the cautions. Part of my driver's education was not just about brakes and gas, it was about specifically how to handle being pulled over by the police as a young black man. So I was trained very well to be ultra compliant. And that was for a survival technique. So my generation, the way that I've taught my children, is that same sort of survival technique. But you know very well that when you're a crowd of cars and then you're pulled over in particular from others, I've had nicer cars in certain times. There's things that you just know are part of it. And it really just depends on the exchange that happens between the police officer in that moment. And that's what really reminded me of the Chauvin case here, is that that interaction is so fundamentally different from typical average African Americans, people of color, than it is. And this is not a general denigration of police. And this is why I think it's a good conversation for us as Catholics, that when we speak about things about racism as being about equality and humanity and being made in the image and likeness of God, we have principles here that allow us to move from very principled things to the realities of everyday life and the nuance that happens in our interactions. And my heart is, there's nothing to really rejoice in my heart about the Chauvin verdict, but at the same time, there's a hope that says, perhaps, we can begin to move beyond our typical spheres of communication, the media sources, and our internal reactions, and start asking different questions about why we are afraid of each other, why we react in these certain situations when these encounters happen, whether it's police or whether it's even social or even within our own church.
Evangelist Damon Owens joining us this morning as we talk about the role of the church with regards to race. And of course, you can join our conversation at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. In light of the verdict, Damon, Bishop McKnight of Jefferson City said, and I'm quoting here, "In our own communities, including the Diocese of Jefferson City, Missouri, individuals are being humiliated and denigrated because of their race. Their human dignity is being crushed and defiled because they are seen as others or less than." How is the verdict in the Chauvin trial the very first stepping stone to changing this mindset? I mean, there's some momentum here because of the verdict. You've seen the reaction, peaceful demonstrations, thanks be to God, across the country. How do we harness that now positive energy for change?
Yeah, I think I might surprise some listeners with my sense that I'm not sure that it will. It has the power in and of itself. Even so far as the initial reactions, in the last year, we've been able to watch a 9-minute video of a man taken into custody and dying literally at the hands of a police officer. And there's still argument about what did he do to cause his own death. And that was from the very beginning. What I read in that is not a hatred of black people or black men as much as a fear. And the what's safe when we're afraid is to get back to the things that we're comfortable with. And I'm talking about everyone, regardless of your skin color, your race, your ethnicity, your nationality. We're more comfortable around people that are like us, this predictable. And we're afraid of other people. And we have to go through sort of a level of comfort before we can even engage a person as a person. But these are principles of our faith that say we have an obligation to do this, to be able to begin not with the first principle of what we've been taught, that someone else is a threat to us because of what we heard, but that this other person fundamentally is a child of God. And yeah, they may be nasty, they may be beautiful, they may be friendly, they may be not, but when it comes to race relations, we've been taught as a nation in so many different ways that someone who looks different than us, the skin color, there's a certain presumption about that person. They're more of a threat, there's a fear. And you know what? It just to lighten it, but it's what happened when we were kids when Jaws came out. You know, when Jaws came out, nobody was thinking about sharks. And yet now we have generations of people who are deathly afraid of sharks. I'm afraid of snakes. I don't think I've ever seen any snakes besides garden snakes and sent to Boy Scouts. But I'm deathly afraid of snakes. And I'm afraid of sharks. And I don't think I've ever seen a shark. So there's a training that happens, the fear. So when we're in these moments of intense, acute fear, we revert back to these fundamental emotive senses of safety and fear. And when we connect to this level of racism, it's not going to be a trial decision that's going to change hearts and minds. It's not just going to be, you know, admonitions from our bishops, which are all necessary. This is all good. But when it comes to changing hearts and minds, this is the work of Christ and of disciples of Christ to really do that homework of our own hearts to say, why am I more afraid? Why am I afraid higher, just a little bit more than I am of black people than I am about white people? As a black person, why am I just a little bit more afraid of a white police officer than others? And some of these fears are rational, and some of them are irrational. So how do you get a law or a verdict to help us in our own heart to sort out, to literally discriminate? That's what it means to cut out these irrational fears that are changing the way that I approach another person, of what I expect from another person. And this is the hard work of what racism looks like in 2021. It's not on the books. It's not a colored water sign, you know, of who can use this. It's not Jim Crow law. It's not the police as the active enforcers of, you know, of a white supremacy. You know, those days gladly are in our past. But at the same time, they're not forgotten. And there still is an entirely different experience that most African Americans have with police in particular than other Americans do. And the first step in that is being willing to listen to those people instead of the typical media sources that inform us about what to be afraid of.
Damon, how do we keep from falling in the trap that many in the media and the messages that they carry almost want to place us on one team and pit us against another team?
That's right.
And get us, like you said, suddenly you need to be afraid of all police officers. They're out to get you. You need to be afraid of all black people because they want to burn your town down. And you need to feel bad about what some bad people did if you're the same skin color as they are automatically. How do we get away from that?
Yeah, no, I think that is the question. And I wish I had the answer, but I do know this. It's not going to happen from Team Red or Team Blue. It's Team White, Team Brown, Team Black. It's not going to happen there. It's just not. And we're going to find ways to comfort each other in our fears before we're going to find ways to encourage one another to say that what divides us is not race. And I'm not trying to be romantic here. We have more in common with people that has nothing to do with race. And I would listen, it's about Team Jesus. If we're going to talk about Team Red, Team Blue, Team Jesus is able to look at people and, you know what, there are saints, sinners, there are evils and good people in every shade of tone. And if there's something in your heart that as you've rationalized that a person, a black person is more dangerous than a white person, you have a problem. If you think in general that a white person is more dangerous than a white person, I'm sorry, a white person more dangerous than a black person, you've got a problem that only you can solve. And it's not going to happen on Team Red, Team Blue, Team South, Team North. It's going to happen in Team Jesus, because God is going to have to exercise in my heart and in your heart this fear that makes me react in crisis situations or even in non-crisis situations in a way that's dishonoring to the other person and allows injustices. I said in the Chauvin case, you know, I'm sorry, the Chauvin case, in these other police brutality cases, we're not dealing, and nobody rightfully is accusing police of going out and assassinating black people. We're way beyond that. It's part of our history. It's part of the cultural memory of African Americans. But when you're in a stress situation, you've already determined in your mind and in your heart that black, brown people are more dangerous than others. That incremental amount, that difference, that fear, is very much the difference between whether you pull the trigger or not. So the question isn't, did this police officer with a 13-year-old child or with the others, with the gang members and the danger situations and all these things, the real question is what's in our hearts that puts us at greater risk because of a trained fear that people of particular race are either more or less dangerous? And that's the kind of work that Team Jesus, I think, is far more capable of working through than any of these others.
888-914-9149, 888-914-9149 with evangelist Damon Owens. Joyful Ever After is his new ministry, and we're talking about the role of the church with regards to race. When we talk about the role of the church is you and me. We are comfortable in our own surroundings, but we probably know within our own circle of family or friends, Damon Owens, someone who does not share that message of unity, that does not share that message of harmony and fraternity that our Creator intends. So you and I individually are the start to the solution to the problem. How does that conversation begin?
Yeah, I think it's an honest one. I think that the conversation, and again, there's such a danger here, John, of you know, over-spiritualizing a natural problem and also being so earthly-minded that we're no heavenly good. So I do believe that the first dialogue, the dialogos, the word between, is not between, you know, an open racist or a, you know, epithet or somebody might say something that is stereotypical. I think the first conversation has to do with me, my conversation with the Lord about revealing my own heart. Because again, going back to the foundation being fear, these fears that we have, it almost makes it easier to turn to the blatant racist who says stuff that's absolutely ridiculous and irrational. And to feel good about ourselves that I've defended, you know, the good of race. And you have. There's no doubt about it. But the deeper issue that we're dealing with in the racism of 2021 is not it's unfashionable to be openly racist, right? It's easily to shame someone because, thank God, we've made progress that the cultural expectation is that you don't treat people that way. But our version now of racism in 2021 is not so much the open racist and the skinheads and all these things that we've been told to distract from. It's in our own heart. Why do I feel an immediate sense of fear when I see a group of 15 black kids hooting up, maybe pushing and jumping at each other, and I would have an entirely different reaction with a group of, say, 15 white kids and the same thing around the high school, and vice versa. You know, as a black person, why do I have a different reaction in those two situations? And that's not something you do on a radio show. That's not something you would confront another person about. I think it really is about letting the Lord heal this sense of why, the same way I'm afraid of snakes, that I am afraid of sharks, even though I've never met one. Are they dangerous? Sure, they could be. But the chances of me actually living my life in fear of something that I've never encountered, I think is really getting at more deeply what we're dealing with this new form of racism. And I want to say one other thing, that when we speak about racism, it's always so much easier because of progress to look in the rearview mirror and either characterize it as what's happened in the past or to base our own reaction or disassociation with former forms of racism. And it's not just modern. This has happened, I think, for 400 years. It's easier to look back and say, well, at least we don't have slavery. At least we don't have Jim Crow. At least we don't lynch anymore. At least we don't, you know, we've got the civil rights laws. But the hard thing for every generation is to look through the windshield, look through the window, and say, what's happening right now in my life, in my culture, in my heart, that is keeping me from really reactively, instinctively seeing another person as a person? And that has not happened in any generation. So that's the work of Team Jesus. That's the work of Christianity. Christ, Lord, let me see. Lord, let me see. Ut videosun. And in that sense, we can do what no law, what no verdict, you know, what no organization, secular organization, could ever do in the transformation of the heart.
Damon, do we need, as our faith might encourage us to do, to just relentlessly focus on the individual, you know, whether we be, you know, divided by race or income or anything like that, but not make that judgment based on, you know, where someone lives, what kind of job they have, what kind of car they have, whatever color they happen to be, but just focus on the individual behavior of that person and give everyone a fair shake until we kind of know otherwise.
I do. I really do believe that. It sounds romantic. It sounds idealistic. But those encounters are so multifaceted, because at the time that we're working, and it does take work to encounter another person as unique and unrepeatable, the work really is about dismantling all of the assumptions that we have in the seconds, in the minutes, in the things that keep us just before we've actually met them and we get to know them. And we start to find out in another frightening way, in fear, that we are so much alike, regardless of skin color, of accent, of language. There's so much alike that there's another fear that creeps in, that my own weakness, my own brokenness, my own sin is now harder to hide because I see it in someone else. So it's easier to sort of compartmentalize. But this is the work. This is the work that Christians would say, that when I meet someone as another person, I'm open now to letting that person in that encounter dissolve all the preconceived notions that I have. Or if they confirm some of them, start to realize, well, you know what? Those things that I thought were part of the whole skin color community, turns out it's really just about an individual person, that there are good people, bad people, nice people, horrible people of every skin color. And our ability to encounter those people is the challenge of being Christ to people. And that's the goal, to be Christ to people. Jesus knows all about this.
Also, one of the antidotes, David, maybe to just as life would allow us the opportunity to get to know a broad mix of people, and so that we're not, again, grouping and judging everyone by some of these extraneous things, but just getting to know other humans.
And this happens so, John, this happens so naturally that when we do that, and we rationalize it again because we want to hold on to the fear, so we'll say this person's an exception. You know, that you're not like all the other, you know, Mexican or the brown, black people. You're not all the other people that are. You're different. You know, you're not like this. And listen, I've got an Ivy League degree. I've worked in corporate America. I've run nonprofits. I have somewhat of a public notoriety in here in, as an evangelist. I've been in circles, and I'm comfortable in so many different places. But what that allows me to do is to be able to see people as they are, and to see how ridiculous racial distinctions are in terms of evaluating a person. And I've got my own biases. I've got my own fears. And I'm constantly being shattered by situations that defy what, you know, I've been taught to expect. I said some things get confirmed. Some things get absolutely defied. And I say, Lord, I just wish everyone could experience not just Damon as an exception, as a black American, a Catholic, but to experience the beauty of humanity, that we have been so distracted by racial and skin color, in particular, so distracted by accent and by language, that we're missing a whole beautiful encounter with people that they would reveal us to ourselves. They would reveal God more to us. We would be by a living example, showing people how ridiculous racial and skin color is as a criteria for division. It's ridiculous. It really makes no rational sense.
Our conversation with Damon Owens this morning here on Morning Air on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. I want to play you this soundbite again, Damon, of this 11-year-old girl in what has now been dubbed as George Floyd Square, the memorial in front of the Cup Foods store in Minneapolis, where George Floyd was originally detained by police. She's 11 years old.
I think moving forward that this is really good and that things will change and that people will think before they do something like this. But there's still much more to go, and this is not the end of it. This is just, like, a little step forward.
As a father, what do you say to that little girl?
I would nurture her hope. You know, I listened to that voice. Sounds very familiar to me. As you know, I have 8 children, all girls. That kind of hope is what I'm hearing, is someone who is around people who are nurturing hope in her, and she's reflecting that. And if we don't have hope in the younger generations for that kind of improvement and progress, we're really sunk. So I'm actually more delighted hearing her hope in that, and her experience then, you know, being testing that hope, her experience with people of saying, well, if I believe this, this is how I encounter other people as people. So God bless her. Absolutely.
Whether it's a matter of race, or maybe it's a white boss being mean to a white worker, Damon, how do you stay patient and would encourage others to stay patient in the face of unfair treatment?
Yeah. And again, when you're getting to, you know, these natural, you know, broken or otherwise human encounters at work, on the street, you know, in conversation, you know, in terms of friends and circles, there's a normative part of that. That there is, we shouldn't be afraid of conflict. We shouldn't be afraid of hurt. And of, you know, even injustice, because not everything is racial. And on one hand, that's sort of when you've been victimized by things in race, it's sort of a reminder that there's always going to be conflict. But when you've never encountered race as an issue, and I'm speaking specifically to white Americans, where race is not something until someone who's non-white is engaged with it. Well, now our life is always racial. So now the flip side of that is recognizing that race is always a constant factor for a large majority of Americans. And, you know, entering into that factor among others, whether it's your own behavior, whether it's the situation, the context, race is always a factor for non-white Americans. So there's a certain sensitivity that, you know, this very may well be, you know, a unique circumstance because of somebody's work performance or attitude or words. But there's always a factor in here that is not part of your perspective, your worldview. So be sensitive to that. And that's the mutual work that we all have to do. That is a legacy of how our country was formed and what still remains, even when the form of racism is so different in 2021 than it is ever in history before.